In the historical rabbit hole we go, exploring the true pagan origins of Adam and Eve. Deep within the dusty archives of ancient Mesopotamia, etched onto clay tablets predating the Bible by over 1,000 years, lies a narrative that will fundamentally challenge everything you've ever believed about Adam and Eve. What if I told you that the story of humanity's first couple, their forbidden fruit, and their fall from grace wasn't divinely revealed to Hebrew scribes, but meticulously borrowed from pagan creation myths that were already ancient when Abraham was born? The evidence is overwhelming. The parallels are undeniable, and the implications are truly staggering. This isn't just an academic exercise or a quest for curiosity. It's a complete rewriting of religious history as we know it. We're talking about goddesses subtly transformed into subordinate wives, divine trees stripped of their sacred power, and serpents recast from benevolent wisdom givers into symbols of ultimate evil. This is the story of how one of the world's most influential religious narratives was painstakingly constructed from the scattered fragments of older, far more complex mythologies. And here's the truly fascinating part. The Hebrew scribes weren't attempting to conceal this borrowing. In fact, the linguistic evidence, the archaeological discoveries, and the textual parallels are so glaringly obvious that once you see them, you simply cannot unsee them. We're going to meticulously trace the evolution of these stories from their polytheistic origins through their monotheistic transformation. And by the end, you'll fully comprehend exactly how the Adam and Eve story, as you know it, came to be, and why it holds far greater significance than you might initially think. But before we dive headfirst into this rabbit hole, let me be absolutely clear about something. This isn't about disproving anyone's deeply held faith or proving anyone wrong. This is about gaining a deeper understanding of how stories travel across cultures, how different societies influence one another, and how the most powerful narratives in human history were carefully crafted by brilliant writers who drew inspiration from the rich mythological traditions of their time. What we're about to explore is the fascinating process of literary adaptation and theological innovation that ultimately gave birth to one of civilization's most enduring tales. So, buckle up tight, because we're about to embark on a journey back 4,000 years to unearth the true pagan origins of Adam and Eve. Let's begin with the pivotal moment that changed absolutely everything. In the mid-19th century, European archaeologists were diligently excavating the ruins of ancient Mesopotamia, fully expecting to uncover evidence that would unequivocally confirm the Bible's historical accuracy. What they unearthed instead completely turned biblical scholarship upside down. As cuneiform tablets were painstakingly unearthed and translated, a shocking reality began to emerge. Many of the Bible's most renowned stories weren't original at all. They were, in fact, adaptations, refinements, and theological reinterpretations of much older Mesopotamian myths. The discovery that truly rocked the scholarly world was the Enuma Elish, often referred to as the Babylonian Genesis. Dating back to at least 1800 BCE, centuries before the composition of Genesis, this epic creation myth contained elements that were immediately recognizable to anyone even remotely familiar with the Bible. But here's where it gets incredibly interesting. The parallels weren't just thematic. They were linguistic, structural, and incredibly specific. In the Enuma Elish, creation begins not with utter nothingness, but with primordial chaos, personified by the goddess Tiamat, who embodies the sea. The Hebrew Bible refers to the same primordial chaos as the deep. But here's the real kicker. The Hebrew word is Tiham, which linguists have definitively proven is directly related to Tiamat. This isn't mere coincidence. This is irrefutable evidence of direct literary borrowing, a smoking gun that clearly reveals how Hebrew scribes skillfully adapted Babylonian source material for their own distinct theological purposes. The story becomes even more compelling when we delve into the creation of humanity itself. Nearly every ancient culture has some version of humans being fashioned from clay. But the specific details are what truly matter. In Ovid's Metamorphoses, Prometheus creates humans by mixing new-made earth with fresh rainwater. Egyptian myths describe the ram-headed god Khnum creating humans as a potter meticulously molds clay on a potter's wheel. But it's the Sumerian traditions that provide the most direct and striking parallel. The primeval mother goddess Nammu created mankind by placing clay in her womb, fashioning servants for the gods. Now, here's where the Adam and Eve story takes on a truly intriguing twist. In Mesopotamian mythology, there's a figure called Adamu. Notice the striking similarity to Adam, created by the god Enki from the dust of the earth in a special garden. The linguistic connection isn't subtle at all. It's right there in the name itself. But it goes even deeper than that. According to some scholars, the biblical Adam may have originated not as the first human being, but as a divine figure in earlier Mesopotamian pantheons, specifically the Sumerian god Edom, who was known as the creator of the first human and the protector of all humanity. This transformation from god to human represents one of the most significant theological shifts in the development of monotheism. The Hebrew writers took a divine creator figure and cleverly reimagined him as the first created being, fundamentally altering the power dynamics of the story while meticulously preserving the essential narrative elements. But the most striking parallel of all emerges from the myth of Enki and Ninhursag, which provides what may very well be the direct source for the creation of Eve from Adam's rib. In this captivating Mesopotamian tale, the god Enki falls gravely ill, and various goddesses are created to heal different parts of his ailing body. One of these goddesses, Ninti, is specifically destined to heal Enki's rib. Here's the truly fascinating part. Ninti's name means both the Lady of the Rib and the Lady of Life. This dual meaning, rib and life, is precisely what we find with Eve, whose name is intricately connected to life and who was created from a rib. The probability that this is mere coincidence is essentially zero. We're looking at the same highly specific anatomical detail, the same linguistic wordplay, and the same conceptual framework. The Hebrew writers clearly had access to this rich Mesopotamian tradition and skillfully adapted it for their own distinct theological narrative. Now, let's delve into what might very well be the most famous borrowed story in all of religious literature, the flood narrative. The parallels between Noah's flood and earlier Mesopotamian flood stories are so extensive and so incredibly detailed that even the most conservative scholars readily acknowledge the undeniable connection. We're talking about the Epic of Atrahasis, which predates the biblical account by over 1,000 years. The similarities aren't just thematic, they're remarkably specific. In both stories, a divine figure warns a righteous man of an impending catastrophic flood sent to completely destroy humanity. In both, the hero is commanded to build a massive boat to specific dimensions. In both, he takes animals aboard the vessel to preserve life. In both, he sends out birds to test for dry land, first a raven, then a dove. And in both narratives, the very first act after the flood subsides is offering a sacrifice, with the divine beings responding positively to the aroma. Irving Finkel, one of the world's leading experts on cuneiform texts, concluded definitively that the iconic story of the flood, Noah, and the Ark as we know it today certainly originated in the landscape of ancient Mesopotamia, modern-day Iraq. The evidence is so overwhelming that it's no longer a matter of scholarly debate. It's an established fact. But here's what makes this borrowing so incredibly sophisticated. The Hebrew writers didn't simply copy these stories wholesale. They skillfully transformed them, adapting the theological framework to serve monotheistic purposes, while meticulously preserving the narrative power that had made these stories so compelling for millennia. Where the Mesopotamian flood is sent because humans rebelled against their forced slave labor to the gods, the biblical flood is attributed to human wickedness and widespread moral corruption. Same story, but with a completely different theology. The figure of the serpent in the Garden of Eden provides another fascinating example of this transformative process. To modern readers, especially Christians, the serpent represents Satan and ultimate evil. But to the ancient authors of Genesis, the snake represented something much older and far more complex. The trickster figure found in mythologies worldwide. From Loki in Norse mythology to Anansi in African traditions to Raven in Pacific Northwest Native American myths, the trickster is a universal archetype, a boundary-crossing figure who brings both wisdom and chaos. In the ancient Near East, serpents were universally associated with divine wisdom and power. They were used in divination, healing practices, and the relentless pursuit of knowledge. The serpent's promise of wisdom in the Garden of Eden would have been entirely consistent with broader cultural expectations. What the Hebrew writers skillfully did was take this positive serpent symbolism and reframe it within their theological framework, transforming the benevolent wisdom giver into a malevolent deceiver. This transformation reflects a broader pattern that we see throughout Genesis. the systematic reinterpretation of pagan religious symbols to serve monotheistic theology. The sacred trees that were central to goddess worship throughout the ancient world become forbidden objects in Eden. The divine feminine figures that played crucial roles in earlier creation myths are either eliminated entirely or transformed into subordinate human characters. Take the figure of Lilith, for example. In Mesopotamian tradition, she was a powerful wind spirit associated with untamed feminine energy. Later Jewish tradition transformed her into Adam's first wife, banished from Eden for refusing to submit to male authority. This transformation clearly reveals how patriarchal monotheism dealt with powerful feminine divine figures from earlier traditions by domesticating them, subordinating them, or casting them as demons. The tree of knowledge of good and evil itself reflects this very same pattern of transformation. Sacred trees were central to ancient pagan religions throughout the Near East, often associated with goddess figures and divine wisdom. In Norse mythology, Yggdrasil is the cosmic tree of both knowledge and life. Hindu mythology speaks of the Aswatha, the inverted cosmic tree whose roots reach the heavens. The biblical prohibition against eating from the tree of knowledge may represent a direct polemic against these ancient pagan tree worship traditions. What we're witnessing in Genesis is a sophisticated literary and theological project. It's the careful adaptation of older mythological traditions to serve a revolutionary new religious vision. The Hebrew writers weren't primitive plagiarists. They were skilled theologians and gifted storytellers who deeply understood the power of familiar narratives to communicate entirely new ideas. This process of adaptation and transformation didn't happen in complete isolation. The crucial period appears to have been the Babylonian exile in the 6th century BCE when Hebrew scribes found themselves living directly among the keepers of these ancient Mesopotamian traditions. It was during this pivotal period of cultural contact and theological reflection that many of the Bible's most famous stories took their final, definitive form. The archaeological evidence strongly supports this timeline perfectly. Cylinder seals from post-Akkadian Mesopotamia dating to around 2300 BC show two figures seated on either side of a tree, reaching for its fruit, with a serpent positioned between them. This iconography predates the biblical account by over a millennium, definitively proving that the essential elements of the Eden story were already present in Mesopotamian culture long before Genesis was even written. What makes this evidence so incredibly compelling is its specificity. We're not talking about vague similarities or universal human themes. We're talking about precise linguistic connections, detailed narrative parallels, and exact iconographic matches. The conclusion is inescapable. The Adam and Eve story, as we know it, was carefully constructed from pre-existing Mesopotamian source material. But here's what makes this discovery so profoundly important. It doesn't diminish the power or significance of these stories. Instead, it reveals the sophisticated process by which universal human concerns about origins, morality, and meaning become encoded into narrative form. The Hebrew writers were participating in a tradition as old as civilization itself, the tradition of using story to make sense of human existence. Understanding the pagan origins of Adam and Eve opens up entirely new avenues for reading these ancient texts. Instead of viewing them as historical accounts or divine revelations dropped from the heavens, we can appreciate them as the products of human creativity, theological innovation, and cross-cultural dialogue. We can see how different cultures wrestled with the same fundamental questions and how stories evolved as they traveled from one civilization to another. The implications extend far beyond mere academic curiosity. Once you understand how these narratives were meticulously constructed, you begin to see the patterns everywhere. You notice the way stories adapt, the way theological concepts evolve, the way human cultures influence each other across both time and space. You realize that what we often casually call religious truth is, in reality, often the product of incredibly sophisticated literary and theological work by ancient writers who were far more cosmopolitan and intellectually curious than we often give them credit for. And we're really just getting started here because the rabbit hole goes much deeper than simple borrowing and adaptation. As we'll soon discover, the transformation of these pagan myths into biblical narrative involved the systematic suppression of feminine divine power, the domestication of nature-based spirituality, and the construction of the theological architecture that would profoundly shape Western civilization for millennia to come. The deeper we delve into this archaeological treasure trove, the more we realize that the story of Adam and Eve wasn't simply borrowed. It was systematically reconstructed to serve a radical new theological agenda. And nowhere is this more evident than in the deliberate erasure and transformation of the divine feminine that dominated ancient Near Eastern religion for thousands and thousands of years. Picture this scene. Before the Hebrew scribes began their sweeping theological revolution, the ancient world was absolutely saturated with powerful goddess figures who controlled creation itself, fertility, wisdom, and the very forces of life. These weren't minor deities relegated to the fringes of religious life. They were the primary divine powers that people turned to for absolutely everything, from childbirth to harvest, from healing to prophecy. The archaeological record is crystal clear on this point. Goddess worship was the dominant religious paradigm across Mesopotamia, Canaan, Egypt, and the broader ancient Near East. But here's where it gets really fascinating. When we examine the Genesis narrative with completely fresh eyes, we can see the ghostly outlines of these suppressed goddess traditions embedded right there in the text itself. The Hebrew writers didn't completely eliminate these feminine divine figures. Instead, they skillfully transformed them, domesticated them, and stripped them of their inherent power while preserving just enough of the original stories to maintain a sense of narrative continuity. Take the figure of Eve herself, for instance. Modern readers see her simply as the first woman, Adam's helper and companion. But the linguistic evidence suggests something far more complex and compelling. The name Eve has been connected to the Hurrian goddess Kaaba, who was actually worshipped in Jerusalem during the Late Bronze Age, centuries before the composition of Genesis. Even more intriguingly, some scholars have noted that the Hebrew name for Eve bears a striking resemblance to an Aramaic word for serpent, directly linking her to the wisdom-bringing snake that plays such a pivotal role in the Eden narrative. This connection is certainly not random. Throughout the ancient Near East, serpents were closely associated with goddess figures who controlled sacred knowledge, healing, and the deep mysteries of life and death. The fact that Eve's name echoes serpent terminology suggests that she may have originally been a much more powerful figure, perhaps a goddess of wisdom or sacred knowledge who was gradually demoted to the role of subordinate wife and convenient scapegoat for humanity's fall. The pattern becomes even clearer when we examine the mysterious figure of Lilith, who appears in later Jewish tradition as Adam's first wife. According to these captivating accounts, Lilith was created equal to Adam, but was ultimately banished from Eden for refusing to submit to male authority. The origins of Lilith clearly lie in Mesopotamian demonology, where she was a powerful wind spirit associated with untamed feminine energy and independence. The transformation of this autonomous divine figure into a cautionary tale about female disobedience reveals exactly how patriarchal monotheism dealt with powerful goddess traditions by recasting them as significant threats to both divine and social order. But the suppression of feminine divinity goes even deeper than individual character transformations. The entire theological framework of Genesis represents a systematic inversion of ancient Near Eastern religious priorities. Where earlier traditions celebrated the creative power of goddesses, Genesis attributes all creative authority to a single male deity. Where earlier myths featured divine couples working in partnership to create and sustain the world, Genesis presents a lone God creating through pure will and word. This wasn't just theological innovation. It was a full-blown ideological revolution. The Hebrew writers were consciously constructing a religious system that would fundamentally alter humanity's relationship to the divine, to nature, and to each other. And they accomplished this by taking the most compelling elements of older religious traditions and re-engineering them to serve entirely new purposes. Consider the sacred tree traditions that were absolutely central to ancient pagan worship. Throughout the ancient world, sacred trees served as cosmic axes connecting heaven, earth, and the underworld. They were closely associated with goddess figures who dispensed wisdom, healing, and divine knowledge to those who approached them with proper reverence. The tree wasn't just a mere symbol. It was a living conduit to divine power, often meticulously tended by priestesses who served as intermediaries between human and divine realms. The tree of knowledge of good and evil in Genesis represents a brilliant theological sleight of hand. The Hebrew writers took this universally recognized symbol of divine wisdom and access to sacred knowledge and transformed it into a forbidden object, a test of obedience rather than a source of profound enlightenment. Where earlier traditions encouraged communion with the sacred tree to gain divine wisdom, Genesis warns that such communion inevitably leads to death and exile. This transformation reveals the deeper agenda at work in Genesis: the systematic replacement of experiential, nature-based spirituality with rule-based, authoritarian religion. Where earlier traditions taught that divine knowledge could be accessed directly through sacred sites, rituals, and communion with divine feminine figures, Genesis establishes a hierarchical system where access to divine truth is mediated exclusively through male authority figures following divine commands. The implications of this theological revolution were truly staggering. By recasting the quest for wisdom as disobedience, the Hebrew writers fundamentally altered humanity's relationship to knowledge itself. Instead of celebrating the human desire to understand divine mysteries, Genesis presents this very desire as the root cause of all human suffering. Instead of honoring the feminine principle as a source of both wisdom and life, it makes women directly responsible for humanity's fall from grace. But here's what makes this transformation so psychologically powerful. The Hebrew writers didn't completely eliminate the older mythological elements that people found so compelling. Instead, they meticulously preserved them within a new theological framework that inverted their original meanings. The result was a narrative that felt familiar enough to be psychologically satisfying while simultaneously advancing a completely revolutionary religious agenda. This process becomes even more evident when we examine the flood narrative in greater detail. The Mesopotamian flood stories weren't simply about divine punishment. They were complex theological meditations on the intricate relationship between gods and humans, the very nature of justice, and the possibility of renewal following a major catastrophe. In the Epic of Atrahasis, the flood is sent because humans rebelled against their brutal enslavement to the gods, making it fundamentally a story about resistance to oppression and the divine response to that resistance. The Hebrew adaptation skillfully transforms this narrative of rebellion into a story about widespread moral corruption and divine judgment. Where the Mesopotamian version presents a complex political and theological situation with multiple divine perspectives, the biblical version simplifies the narrative into a clear moral framework. Humans become wicked, God responds with harsh judgment, and the righteous are ultimately saved. Same basic story structure, but with a completely different ideological message. This pattern of simplification and moral reframing appears consistently throughout Genesis. Complex polytheistic narratives with multiple divine perspectives and ambiguous moral implications get streamlined into clear monotheistic parables with obvious moral lessons. The sophisticated theological debates embedded in earlier traditions get neatly reduced to simple obedience-disobedience frameworks. But perhaps the most revealing transformation involves the very figure of the serpent itself. In ancient Near Eastern tradition, serpents were universally associated with divine wisdom, healing, and profound renewal. The serpent's unique ability to shed its skin made it a powerful symbol of rebirth and transformation. Its inherent connection to the earth made it a mediator between the underworld and the surface world. Its central role in divination and healing made it a powerful symbol of access to divine knowledge. The Hebrew writers took this positive serpent symbolism and inverted it completely. Instead of a benevolent wisdom giver, the serpent becomes a malevolent deceiver. Instead of offering genuine divine knowledge, it offers nothing but false promises. Instead of facilitating human spiritual development, it becomes the agent of humanity's downfall. This transformation clearly reveals the systematic way that Genesis reframes older religious symbols to serve new theological purposes. What's particularly striking is how this inversion works psychologically. The serpent's promise in Genesis, "You will be like God, knowing good and evil," would have resonated powerfully with ancient audiences intimately familiar with serpent wisdom traditions. The promise sounds exactly like what serpents offered in older religious contexts: access to divine knowledge and true spiritual transformation. The Hebrew writers skillfully used this familiar expectation to create a narrative trap where what appears to be traditional serpent wisdom ultimately turns out to be nothing more than deception and total destruction. This sophisticated manipulation of audience expectations reveals just how carefully crafted the Genesis narrative really is. The Hebrew writers weren't primitive storytellers working with crude materials. They were skilled theologians and literary artists who understood exactly how to use familiar mythological elements to advance revolutionary new ideas about the very nature of divinity, humanity, and moral authority. The archaeological evidence continues to strongly support this particular interpretation. Excavations throughout the ancient Near East have revealed the widespread nature of goddess worship, serpent symbolism, and sacred tree traditions that Genesis systematically reframes. We're not dealing with isolated similarities or coincidental parallels. We're looking at the systematic theological appropriation and transformation of an entire religious worldview. Temple complexes throughout Canaan and Mesopotamia show clear evidence of goddess worship deeply integrated with sacred tree and serpent symbolism. Figurines, seals, and artwork depict divine feminine figures closely associated with trees, serpents, and the dispensation of wisdom. The very religious landscape that the Hebrew writers inhabited was saturated with these older traditions, making their systematic reinterpretation all the more remarkable. But here's what makes this story so profoundly compelling from a historical perspective. We can actually trace the entire process of transformation. The biblical text itself preserves evidence of earlier traditions that were gradually suppressed or reinterpreted. References to Asherah, the Canaanite goddess closely associated with sacred trees, appear throughout the Hebrew Bible, usually in contexts where the biblical writers are explicitly condemning her worship. This suggests that goddess traditions remained extremely popular among ordinary Israelites long after the official theological establishment had firmly rejected them. The tension between popular religious practice and official theological doctrine helps to explain why the Genesis narrative had to be so carefully crafted. The Hebrew writers couldn't simply reject the older mythological traditions outright. They were far too deeply embedded in the cultural consciousness of their audience. Instead, they had to create a narrative that acknowledged these traditions while fundamentally reframing their underlying meaning and overall significance. This process of cultural negotiation and theological innovation makes the Adam and Eve story far more interesting than a simple tale of divine revelation or primitive mythology. What we're looking at is irrefutable evidence of sophisticated intellectual work by ancient theologians who deeply understood how to use familiar narrative elements to advance revolutionary new ideas about the very nature of ultimate reality. The implications of this discovery extend far beyond the realm of ancient history. Understanding how the Adam and Eve narrative was meticulously constructed from older mythological materials reveals the complex process by which religious ideas develop, adapt, and spread across cultures. It shows us that what we often think of as timeless religious truths are actually the products of specific historical circumstances, cultural interactions, and theological innovations by particular communities at particular moments in time. This doesn't diminish the inherent power or overall significance of these stories. If anything, it makes them even more remarkable. The fact that ancient Hebrew theologians could take disparate mythological traditions from across the ancient Near East and weave them into a coherent narrative that has shaped Western civilization for over two millennia is. It stands as a testament to their intellectual sophistication and remarkable literary prowess. However, it simultaneously introduces profound questions concerning religious authority, the accuracy of historical accounts, and the very nature of divine revelation, issues that continue to resonate deeply today. Once you grasp the actual construction of these foundational narratives, your perception of them will undergo a permanent transformation. As we'll soon see, this rabbit hole leads us far beyond simple literary borrowing and theological adaptation. The creation of the Adam and Eve narrative wasn't merely about crafting fresh religious tales. It involved a radical restructuring of human society itself. The transformation we've been investigating didn't occur in some detached theological bubble. It unfolded during one of the most deeply traumatic and formative periods in ancient Hebrew history, the Babylonian exile of the 6th century BCE. Here's where everything falls into place, where all these mythological borrowings and theological innovations suddenly click into perfect historical focus. Imagine the scene. Jerusalem has fallen. The temple lies in ruins, and the Hebrew intellectual elite are forcibly relocated to Babylon, the very heart of Mesopotamian civilization. They're more than just political prisoners. They're cultural refugees thrust into direct contact with the most ancient and sophisticated mythological traditions the world has ever known. For the first time, Hebrew scribes have unrestricted access to the immense libraries of cuneiform tablets, repositories of thousands of years of Mesopotamian religious thought. But here's the pivotal point. They're not simply passive recipients of this cultural inheritance. They're the traumatized survivors of a national catastrophe, wrestling with fundamental questions about their identity, their covenant with their God, and their future as a people. The exile isn't merely a political crisis. It's an existential emergency demanding new theological frameworks and fresh religious narratives. This serves as the crucible in which Genesis was forged. The Hebrew scribes weren't simply copying Mesopotamian stories for entertainment or to preserve culture. They were engaged in a critical project of theological reconstruction, using familiar mythological materials to erect a new religious foundation capable of sustaining their community through this crisis and beyond. The Adam and Eve narrative emerges from this context as a sophisticated piece of crisis theology cleverly disguised as ancient history. The evidence supporting this timeline is overwhelming. Linguistic analysis reveals that many of the most distinctively Mesopotamian elements present in Genesis appear in Hebrew precisely during this period. Technical vocabulary, narrative structures, and theological concepts, all previously foreign to Hebrew literature, suddenly surface in texts that scholars can confidently date to the exilic and post-exilic periods. This isn't a matter of gradual cultural transmission unfolding over centuries. We're witnessing a period of rapid, intensive borrowing concentrated within a specific historical window. However, this borrowing wasn't random or unconscious. The Hebrew scribes were making deliberate choices about which elements to preserve, which to modify, and which to reject altogether. Each adaptation served their broader theological and political agenda, shaping a religious system capable of maintaining Hebrew identity while competing effectively with the powerful imperial religions they encountered in Babylon. This competitive aspect is critical for understanding the specific form that the Adam and Eve story ultimately took. The Hebrew scribes weren't writing in isolation. They were writing for a community constantly exposed to alternative religious narratives, each claiming to explain the fundamental questions of human existence. Babylonian creation myths, Persian dualistic theology, Egyptian afterlife doctrines, all these competing systems offered compelling answers to the very same questions that Genesis addresses. The brilliance of the Genesis narrative lies in its masterful incorporation of familiar elements from these competing traditions while subtly undermining their underlying theological foundations. Consider the creation sequence itself. While Babylonian creation myths depict violent conflicts between chaotic forces and ordering deities, Genesis portrays creation as the peaceful, orderly work of a single supreme being. The same cosmic scope, yet an entirely different vision of divine power and cosmic harmony. This wasn't accidental. The Hebrew scribes understood that their audience required a creation story that could rival Babylonian epics in grandeur and cosmic significance, but also one that would advance their own theological agenda regarding the nature of divine authority and human responsibility. The result is a narrative that feels familiar enough to be psychologically satisfying, yet revolutionary enough to reshape religious consciousness. The Adam and Eve story fulfills a similar competitive function. Ancient audiences were acquainted with tales about primordial humans, divine gardens, and the loss of immortality from numerous cultural traditions. However, the Hebrew version takes these universally known themes and utilizes them to promote specific theological claims about the relationship between divine authority and human freedom, the nature of moral knowledge, and the consequences of autonomous decision-making. The psychological power of this lies in how the narrative leverages familiar mythological expectations to create surprise and cognitive dissonance. Ancient readers would have naturally expected the quest for divine knowledge to be portrayed positively, as was customary in most mythological traditions. The shock of having this expectation overturned creates a memorable narrative moment that reinforces the theological message about obedience and authority. This technique is pervasive throughout the narrative. The serpent speaks and offers wisdom, precisely what ancient audiences would anticipate from serpent figures in religious narratives. However, rather than delivering genuine wisdom, it delivers deception and ultimate destruction. The tree offers divine knowledge, exactly what sacred trees offered in ancient religious traditions. However, instead of enlightenment, it brings exile and death. The Hebrew writers systematically employed familiar mythological tropes to create unexpected theological reversals. These reversals weren't mere literary devices. They were tools of cultural resistance and religious innovation. By taking the most recognizable elements of ancient Near Eastern religion and inverting their traditional meanings, the Hebrew scribes crafted a narrative that simultaneously acknowledged and rejected the religious worldview of their imperial captors. Its cultural appropriation serving theological independence. The sophistication of this strategy becomes even more evident when we examine how it functions on multiple levels simultaneously. On the surface, Genesis appears to be telling a simple story about the first humans and their relationship with their creator. However, beneath this surface narrative, it's conducting a systematic critique of ancient Near Eastern religious assumptions about divine plurality, cosmic conflict, and the nature of sacred knowledge. The theological implications were revolutionary. While ancient Near Eastern religions typically featured pantheons of specialized deities approached through intricate ritual systems, Genesis presents a single deity who creates through pure will and communicates directly with humans. While earlier traditions often portrayed divine knowledge as accessible through ritual, divination, or communion with sacred sites, Genesis presents such knowledge as fundamentally off-limits to human beings. This wasn't simply theological innovation. It was social engineering on a massive scale. The Hebrew scribes were leveraging familiar mythological narratives to advance a completely new vision of religious authority, social organization, and individual responsibility. They were constructing the intellectual foundation for a religious system that would prove remarkably successful at maintaining community coherence across cultural boundaries and historical changes. The success of this strategy is evident in how the Genesis narrative functions in later Jewish and Christian traditions. Despite its construction from clearly non-Hebrew sources, it becomes the foundational story defining Jewish identity and shaping Christian theology. The borrowed elements don't diminish its authority. They enhance its psychological power by tapping into universal human mythological expectations while redirecting them toward new theological conclusions. However, the cultural impact extends far beyond religious communities. The Genesis narrative introduces conceptual frameworks that fundamentally reshape Western civilization's approach to questions of authority, knowledge, and moral responsibility. The idea that seeking unauthorized knowledge is inherently dangerous, the notion that suffering results from moral failure, the assumption that proper relationships require hierarchical submission. All these concepts trace back to theological innovations embedded in the Adam and Eve story. This is where the pagan origins of Adam and Eve become more than just a matter of historical curiosity. Understanding how these concepts were constructed from earlier mythological materials reveals their contingent, culturally specific character. What's often presented as universal human truth turns out to be the product of particular historical circumstances and specific theological agendas. The archaeological evidence continues to support this interpretation. Excavations at sites throughout Mesopotamia and the Levant reveal the rich religious landscape from which Genesis emerged. Temple complexes, ritual objects, and artistic representations demonstrate how goddess worship, sacred tree traditions, and serpent symbolism functioned in their original cultural contexts before being appropriated and transformed by Hebrew theological innovation. Particularly revealing are the cylinder seals and other artifacts that preserve iconographic traditions predating Genesis by centuries or even millennia. These objects reveal that the essential narrative elements of the Eden story, human figures, sacred trees, serpent wisdom givers, were already established as recognizable mythological motifs long before Hebrew scribes began their theological reconstruction project. The compelling nature of this evidence lies in its consistency across time and geography. From Sumerian temple art to Babylonian ritual objects to Canaanite religious figurines, we see the same basic symbolic complex appearing repeatedly. Divine feminine figures associated with sacred trees and serpent wisdom. The Hebrew transformation of this complex into the Eden narrative represents not the origin of these traditions, but their systematic theological reinterpretation. This reinterpretation process reveals something fascinating about how religious ideas actually develop and spread. Rather than emerging from divine revelation or pure human creativity, the most influential religious narratives typically result from sophisticated processes of cultural borrowing, theological adaptation, and narrative innovation. The Adam and Eve story exemplifies this process in remarkable detail. The implications for understanding religious authority and scriptural interpretation are profound. Once you recognize the extensive borrowing by Genesis from earlier mythological traditions, traditional claims about its unique divine origin become much harder to maintain. Instead, what emerges is a picture of brilliant human theological work deserving respect for its intellectual sophistication and cultural impact rather than its supernatural origins. This doesn't diminish the story's significance. If anything, it makes it even more remarkable. The fact that ancient Hebrew theologians could take disparate mythological elements from across the ancient world and synthesize them into a coherent narrative that has shaped human consciousness for millennia demonstrates an extraordinary intellectual achievement. Understanding the pagan origins of Adam and Eve reveals not divine dictation, but human genius working with inherited cultural materials to create something genuinely new. The process of discovery itself tells an important story about how knowledge develops and spreads. For centuries, Genesis was read as a unique, divinely revealed account of human origins. The 19th century archaeological discoveries that revealed its mythological sources created a crisis for traditional interpretation that scholars are still working through today. This ongoing process of reinterpretation demonstrates how new evidence can fundamentally alter our understanding of even the most familiar cultural materials. But perhaps the most important implication involves how we understand the relationship between religious truth and historical accuracy. The pagan origins of Adam and Eve demonstrate that powerful religious narratives don't depend on literal historical accuracy for their cultural significance. Instead, their power resides in their ability to encode universal human concerns about meaning, morality, and identity in memorable, psychologically compelling forms. This perspective opens new possibilities for reading ancient texts that don't depend on defending their historical accuracy or supernatural origins. Instead of asking whether these stories literally happened, we can ask how they function as cultural artifacts, what psychological needs they address, and how they've shaped human consciousness across time and geography. The Adam and Eve narrative, understood in its full historical and cultural context, becomes a window into one of the most significant intellectual achievements in human history: the systematic transformation of ancient mythological traditions into the foundation of monotheistic religion. The individuals who accomplished this transformation weren't passive Hebrew scribes, recipients of divine revelation. They were creative theologians working with inherited cultural materials to address the urgent needs of their community. Understanding this process doesn't resolve the theological questions that Genesis raises. If anything, it makes them more complex and interesting, but it does provide crucial context for approaching these questions with appropriate intellectual honesty and historical awareness. The pagan origins of Adam and Eve reveal not the failure of religious truth, but the sophisticated human processes through which religious truths get constructed, transmitted, and continuously reinterpreted across cultures and centuries. And we're still not done, because the theological revolution that created the Adam and Eve story didn't just reshape ancient Hebrew religion. It established patterns of religious authority, gender relations, and cosmic understanding that continue to shape Western civilization today. The rabbit hole leads not just backward into ancient history, but forward into the contemporary world, where these ancient theological innovations continue to influence how millions of people understand themselves, their relationships, and their place in the cosmic order. The deeper we excavate these ancient foundations, the more we realize that understanding the pagan origins of Adam and Eve isn't just about correcting historical misconceptions. It's about comprehending the intellectual architecture that still structures much of human religious and moral consciousness. And that architecture, as we're about to discover, was built on foundations that its creators deliberately obscured, creating mysteries that scholars are only now beginning to fully unravel. The theological architecture we've been exploring had consequences that extended far beyond ancient religious debates. What the Hebrew scribes accomplished during the Babylonian exile wasn't just literary adaptation. It was the systematic construction of new frameworks for understanding power, knowledge, and human relationships that would echo through millennia. And nowhere is this more evident than in how these ancient innovations shaped the very foundations of patriarchal authority that continue to influence Western civilization today. Consider what happened to the concept of divine knowledge itself. In the religious traditions that Genesis borrowed from, access to sacred wisdom was typically mediated through priestesses, sacred sites, and direct communion with divine forces. Knowledge wasn't something you received through hierarchical authority. It was something you experienced through ritual participation, mystical encounter, and spiritual discipline. The goddess traditions of the ancient Near East offered multiple pathways to divine understanding, often emphasizing personal transformation and direct spiritual experience. The Genesis narrative fundamentally altered this paradigm by making the quest for divine knowledge the original sin. The Hebrew writers didn't just tell a story about disobedience. They created a theological framework that would justify restricting access to sacred knowledge to authorized male interpreters for thousands of years to come. The tree of knowledge becomes not a symbol of available wisdom, but a warning about the dangers of unauthorized spiritual seeking. This transformation had immediate practical consequences for how religious communities organized themselves. While earlier traditions often featured female religious specialists serving as intermediaries between human and divine realms, the post-Genesis religious world increasingly concentrated spiritual authority in male hierarchies. The goddess traditions providing alternative sources of religious legitimacy were systematically marginalized, replaced by systems deriving their authority from correct interpretation of divinely revealed texts. However, the implications went deeper than religious organization. The Adam and Eve narrative established conceptual patterns that would shape Western thinking about the relationship between knowledge and authority for centuries to come. The idea that certain kinds of knowledge are inherently dangerous, that wisdom must be mediated through proper channels, that autonomous intellectual investigation represents a form of rebellion against legitimate authority. All these concepts trace their lineage back to the theological innovations embedded in Genesis. The transformation of Eve, from what may have originally been a divine wisdom figure into a subordinate human bringing destruction through her desire for knowledge, represents one of the most consequential character assassinations in literary history. This wasn't just storytelling. It was the mythological foundation for centuries of restrictions on women's access to education, religious authority, and intellectual autonomy. The narrative doesn't just explain why women suffer in childbirth. It provides theological justification for why they shouldn't be trusted with important decisions. The psychological power of this narrative framework becomes evident when we consider how it continues to influence contemporary debates about education, scientific research, and religious authority. The suspicion of intellectual curiosity encoded in Genesis, the assumption that certain kinds of knowledge are too dangerous for ordinary people to handle, the notion that proper relationships require hierarchical submission, these aren't just ancient ideas preserved in religious texts. They're active conceptual frameworks continuing to shape political and social discourse today. What makes this so fascinating from a historical perspective is how successfully the Hebrew theological revolution obscured its own origins. For most of Western history, the Genesis narrative was read as divinely revealed truth rather than a sophisticated theological adaptation of earlier mythological traditions. This interpretive framework made it almost impossible to recognize the systematic way Genesis had appropriated and transformed goddess traditions, sacred tree symbolism, and serpent wisdom motifs from across the ancient world. The archaeological discoveries of the 19th and 20th centuries, revealing these pagan origins, created what scholars call a hermeneutical crisis, a fundamental challenge to traditional methods of biblical interpretation. Once you understand the extent of Genesis's borrowing from earlier sources, you can't simply read it as a unique divine revelation. Instead, you must grapple with questions about cultural transmission, theological innovation, and the human processes through which religious authority is constructed and maintained. This crisis reveals something important about how religious traditions actually function. The power of the Genesis narrative didn't depend on its historical originality, but on its psychological effectiveness and cultural utility. The Hebrew scribes weren't trying to create historically accurate accounts of primordial events. They were trying to construct compelling theological frameworks capable of sustaining their community through crisis and providing intellectual foundations for a new kind of religious system. The sophistication of their achievement becomes even more apparent when we consider how successfully they solved the fundamental problem facing any theological innovation. How to introduce revolutionary new ideas while maintaining psychological continuity with familiar cultural materials. The Genesis narrative accomplishes this by preserving recognizable mythological elements while systematically inverting their traditional meanings and implications. This technique appears throughout the biblical corpus, but reaches its most sophisticated expression in the Adam and Eve story. Every major element, the garden setting, the sacred tree, the wisdom-bringing serpent, the divine knowledge quest, would have been immediately familiar to ancient audiences. However, each element is reframed within a theological system using these familiar expectations to advance completely new ideas about divine authority, human responsibility, and the nature of moral knowledge. The genius of this approach lies in its creation of cognitive resonance while facilitating conceptual transformation. Ancient readers could connect emotionally with the narrative because it employed mythological motifs they already understood, but were simultaneously being introduced to theological frameworks fundamentally altering their understanding of themselves and their relationship to ultimate reality. It's psychological programming disguised as storytelling. The long-term cultural impact of this programming has been staggering. The conceptual frameworks established in Genesis provided the intellectual foundation for religious systems that would eventually dominate Western civilization. The notion that divine authority should be mediated through textual interpretation rather than direct spiritual experience, the assumption that moral knowledge comes through obedience to revealed commands rather than autonomous ethical reflection, the idea that proper relationships require hierarchical submission rather than egalitarian partnership, all these concepts derive from theological innovations first encoded in the Adam and Eve narrative. But perhaps the most significant long-term consequence involves how Genesis reshaped Western civilization's relationship to the natural world itself. The earlier mythological traditions Genesis borrowed from typically portrayed humans as embedded within natural systems, themselves sacred and alive. Goddess traditions emphasize the interconnectedness of all life, the spiritual significance of natural cycles, and the importance of maintaining harmonious relationships with the living earth. The Genesis narrative systematically dismantled this ecological consciousness by making humans the pinnacle of creation and portraying the natural world as existing primarily for human benefit. By removing divine presence from natural phenomena and concentrating it in a transcendent male deity, Genesis laid the intellectual groundwork for the instrumental relationship to nature that would eventually enable both Western technological dominance and ecological destruction. This transformation wasn't accidental. The Hebrew theological revolution was explicitly designed to replace nature-based spirituality with text-based religious authority. Sacred groves, holy mountains, and divine springs, all the natural sites where earlier traditions had located divine presence, are replaced by a single portable textual tradition that could maintain religious authority independent of geographical location. It was a brilliant solution to the practical problems facing a displaced community, but it came at the cost of severing the spiritual connections to the natural world that had sustained human communities for millennia. The archaeological evidence reveals the scope of what was lost in this transformation. Excavations throughout the ancient Near East show sophisticated religious traditions integrating human communities into larger natural and cosmic systems through complex ritual cycles, sacred site networks, and ecological awareness. The goddess traditions Genesis systematically suppressed weren't primitive superstitions, but sophisticated spiritual technologies for maintaining sustainable relationships between human communities and the living systems supporting them. The systematic replacement of these traditions with text-based, hierarchically organized religious authority represents one of the most significant cultural transformations in human history. It established patterns of thinking about authority, knowledge, and human nature relationships that would eventually enable both the remarkable achievements and the devastating failures of Western civilization. The Adam and Eve narrative sits at the center of this transformation, encoding the theological assumptions making it possible. Understanding this historical process doesn't require rejecting the cultural achievements emerging from it. Western civilization's contributions to human knowledge, artistic expression, and social organization are undeniable. However, understanding the pagan origins of foundational narratives like Adam and Eve does reveal the contingent, historically specific character of conceptual frameworks often presented as universal human truths. This perspective opens possibilities for cultural criticism and reconstruction unavailable when these narratives were understood as divinely revealed truths. Once you recognize how the Genesis story was constructed from earlier mythological materials to serve specific theological and political agendas, You can begin to imagine alternative ways of organizing human relationships, understanding moral authority, and relating to the natural world, drawing on different mythological and philosophical traditions. The contemporary relevance of these ancient theological innovations becomes particularly apparent when we consider ongoing debates about religious authority, gender equality, environmental protection, and the relationship between scientific knowledge and spiritual wisdom. The conceptual frameworks established in Genesis continue to influence how these debates unfold, often in ways participants don't fully recognize or acknowledge. The suspicion of autonomous intellectual investigation encoded in Genesis continues to shape contemporary resistance to scientific findings challenging traditional religious teachings. The hierarchical understanding of proper relationships promoted by the narrative continues to influence debates about gender roles, family structure, and social organization. The instrumental relationship to the natural world Genesis establishes continues to undermine efforts to develop more sustainable economic and political systems. These connections aren't abstract or theoretical. The theological innovations embedded in the Adam and Eve narrative continue to function as active cultural forces shaping how millions of people understand themselves, their relationships, and their responsibilities. Understanding the pagan origins of these innovations provides crucial tools for recognizing their historical contingency and imagining alternatives better serving contemporary human needs. The process of excavating these ancient foundations also reveals something important about how cultural transformation actually happens. The Hebrew scribes who created the Genesis narrative weren't working in isolation. They were participating in broader cultural conversations about the nature of divine authority, human responsibility, and cosmic order taking place throughout the ancient world. Their theological innovations succeeded not because they were divinely inspired, but because they offered compelling solutions to real problems facing their communities. This point of view suggests that current efforts aimed at tackling the limitations and harmful outcomes of Western civilization's predominant mythological structures could greatly benefit from similar approaches involving creative adaptation and theological innovation. Rather than simply dismissing or staunchly defending time-honored traditions, we might investigate how components from various cultural and spiritual backgrounds could be combined into fresh frameworks. These new frameworks could better address the evolving needs of people today, all while remaining psychologically engaging and culturally enduring. The pagan roots of the Adam and Eve story don't highlight the failure of religious truth. Instead, they reveal the ever-present human need to craft significant stories that can shed light on our existence, offer moral direction, and support communities through the trials of history. The Hebrew scribes who conceived this narrative were involved in a vital human endeavor that every generation must undertake: the building of cultural frameworks that can grapple with the core questions of human existence, while also addressing the unique challenges and possibilities that their time periods present. Understanding this process doesn't lessen the importance of what they achieved. If anything, it makes their accomplishment even more impressive. The reality that ancient theological innovations are still impacting human consciousness thousands of years after they were created proves the incredible power of carefully crafted mythological stories to mold cultural development across extensive periods and geographical areas. However, it also shines a light on the duty that comes with having such power. The stories we develop and the interpretations we put forward have consequences that go far beyond their immediate cultural settings. The theological structures found in stories such as Adam and Eve continue to shape how people see themselves and how they relate to one another and the natural world. This continuous influence makes it essential for us to grasp how these structures were created, what goals they were intended to fulfill, and whether they are still helping people thrive in today's world. The rabbit hole of pagan origins doesn't just lead us back into ancient history. It also propels us forward into considering cultural responsibility and the ongoing human mission of creating meaningful and sustainable ways of life. The Adam and Eve narrative, when understood within its complete historical and cultural setting, transforms from being just an old story about the first people into a window showing the continuous human battle to create frameworks for comprehending existence. These frameworks can support communities, provide moral guidance, and effectively tackle the challenges and possibilities that each generation encounters. And, as we are about to find out, this ancient battle is still going on today as academics, religious groups, and cultural critics struggle with the consequences of comprehending how one of humankind's most influential stories was actually put together. The discoveries we have explored don't just change how we interpret ancient texts. They also push us to think more profoundly about how we create meaning, arrange communities, and understand our place in the vast universe. The pagan beginnings of Adam and Eve don't only reveal the past. They also unveil possibilities for the future that are still largely unexplored. The contemporary implications of these ancient discoveries go way beyond academic discussions or historical interest. We are living in a time when the very cornerstones of Western religious thought are being dug up and examined. This reveals construction materials that most people never even knew existed. And this digging up process is happening precisely when humanity is dealing with challenges that may demand fundamentally different ways of thinking about authority, knowledge, and our connection to the natural world. Consider what happens when you trace the intellectual roots of current environmental destruction back to their mythological origins. The Genesis narrative doesn't simply tell a story about the first people. It lays out a specific understanding of humanity's connection to the natural world that has shaped Western civilization's approach to ecological issues for thousands of years. The concept that humans are separate from and superior to nature, that the natural world mainly exists for human benefit, and that divine presence is found outside of rather than within natural systems can all be traced back to the theological innovations we have been examining. But here's where it gets really interesting. The earlier mythological traditions that Genesis borrowed from and changed offered completely different frameworks for understanding human nature and relationships. The goddess traditions of the ancient Near East usually depicted humans as being part of sacred natural systems, relying on maintaining harmonious relationships with the living earth for both physical and spiritual well-being. Sacred trees weren't forbidden objects. They were sources of wisdom and healing. Serpents weren't symbols of deception. They were mediators between different levels of reality. This isn't just historical trivia. These alternative mythological frameworks lay out different ways of thinking about sustainability, responsibility, and the proper relationship between human communities and the ecological systems that support them. Understanding how Genesis systematically suppressed these alternatives reveals not only what was lost when monotheism took over, but also what possibilities are still available for current communities struggling to create more sustainable ways of life. The process becomes even more complex when we consider how these ancient theological innovations continue to influence current debates about scientific knowledge and religious authority. The suspicion of independent intellectual investigation that Genesis contains, the idea that certain types of knowledge are inherently dangerous and should be restricted to authorized interpreters, continues to shape resistance to scientific findings that challenge traditional religious teachings. But this resistance isn't just about defending ancient texts against modern discoveries. It's about protecting entire systems of social organization that depend on maintaining traditional forms of religious authority. The hierarchical structures that trace their legitimacy back to Genesis-based theology have enormous investments in preventing the kind of intellectual autonomy that might lead people to question not just specific religious claims, but the entire framework of mediated spiritual authority that these structures represent. This is why the archaeological discoveries revealing the pagan origins of biblical narratives created such profound cultural anxiety. It wasn't just that scholars had found evidence of literary borrowing. It was that this evidence undermined the entire foundation for religious systems that had organized Western society for centuries. Once people understand how extensively Genesis borrows from earlier mythological traditions, traditional claims about unique divine revelation become much harder to maintain. The implications extend into contemporary politics in ways that most people don't fully recognize. The conceptual frameworks established in Genesis continue to influence how political debates unfold, particularly around questions of authority, expertise, and the proper relationship between knowledge and power. The assumption that wisdom should be mediated through hierarchical authority rather than emerging from autonomous investigation, the notion that questioning established teachings represents a form of dangerous rebellion, and the idea that proper relationships require submission to legitimate authority, all of these political concepts have deep roots in the theological innovations we've been exploring. Understanding these connections doesn't provide simple solutions to contemporary political challenges, but it does reveal why certain kinds of arguments resonate so powerfully with particular audiences. People who have been raised within religious traditions that trace back to Genesis carry conceptual frameworks that make them psychologically predisposed to certain kinds of political appeals, even when those appeals are made in secular contexts. The theological programming runs deeper than conscious religious belief. This psychological dimension becomes particularly important when we consider how contemporary movements are attempting to reconstruct more egalitarian and sustainable social systems. Simply advocating for policy changes or institutional reforms may not be sufficient if the underlying mythological frameworks that shape how people understand authority, knowledge, and proper relationships remain unchanged. Lasting cultural transformation may require the kind of theological innovation that the Hebrew scribes accomplished. The systematic construction of new mythological frameworks that can compete successfully with inherited traditions while advancing different visions of human possibility. This is where the study of ancient mythological adaptation becomes more than historical research. It becomes a guide for contemporary cultural work. The Hebrew scribes succeeded in transforming civilization not through political revolution or economic change, but through the careful reconstruction of the foundational narratives that shape human consciousness. They understood that lasting change requires working at the level of myth, symbol, and story rather than just policy and institution. Their techniques remain relevant for contemporary efforts to address the limitations and destructive consequences of Western civilization's dominant cultural patterns. The systematic appropriation and reinterpretation of familiar mythological elements, the psychological use of narrative expectations to advance new conceptual frameworks, and the integration of diverse cultural traditions into coherent theological systems, all of these approaches could inform contemporary efforts to construct more sustainable and equitable cultural alternatives. But the process also reveals the dangers inherent in mythological reconstruction projects. The theological innovations embedded in Genesis succeeded in transforming civilization, but they also established patterns of thinking that eventually enabled both remarkable cultural achievements and devastating ecological destruction. The suppression of goddess traditions didn't just eliminate alternative forms of religious authority. It also severed spiritual connections to the natural world that had sustained human communities for millennia. Contemporary efforts to reconstruct more sustainable mythological frameworks need to grapple seriously with this historical precedent. How do you create theological innovations that serve immediate community needs without establishing conceptual patterns that might prove destructive over longer time spans? How do you appropriate and transform inherited cultural materials without losing essential wisdom that those materials preserve? How do you construct religious authority that can provide community coherence without becoming oppressive or exclusive? These questions become particularly urgent when we consider the global scope of contemporary challenges. Climate change, biodiversity loss, social inequality, and political polarization. All of these problems may require the kind of fundamental shifts in consciousness that can only be achieved through mythological transformation. But such transformation needs to happen across multiple cultural traditions simultaneously, requiring unprecedented levels of cross-cultural dialogue and collaboration. The pagan origins of Adam and Eve provide a useful case study for understanding how such transformation might work. The Hebrew scribes didn't create their theological innovations in isolation. They were participating in broader cultural conversations that were taking place throughout the ancient world. Their success came partly from their ability to synthesize elements from diverse traditions into frameworks that could compete successfully in a multicultural environment. Contemporary mythological reconstruction might require similar synthetic approaches that draw on wisdom traditions from around the world, while remaining sensitive to questions of cultural appropriation and power dynamics. The challenge is to create genuinely inclusive frameworks that can provide psychological coherence for diverse communities while avoiding the homogenizing tendencies that characterized earlier imperial religious systems. The archaeological evidence continues to reveal the richness of the cultural traditions that were suppressed or transformed during the development of monotheism. Recent discoveries and sites throughout the ancient Near East show sophisticated religious systems that integrated ecological awareness, gender equality, and decentralized spiritual authority in ways that might inform contemporary efforts to construct more sustainable cultural alternatives. These weren't primitive societies that needed to be replaced by more advanced religious systems. They were complex civilizations that had developed spiritual technologies for maintaining sustainable relationships between human communities and the natural systems that supported them. Understanding what was lost in the transition to monotheism provides crucial perspective for contemporary efforts to address the ecological and social crises that Western civilization now faces. The theological innovations that created the modern world also established the conceptual frameworks that make it difficult to respond effectively to the consequences of those innovations. Breaking out of these patterns may require recovering and adapting elements from the mythological traditions that were systematically suppressed during the formation of Western religious thought. But this recovery process needs to be informed by honest acknowledgement of why those traditions were suppressed in the first place. The Hebrew theological revolution succeeded partly because it offered solutions to real problems that earlier religious systems hadn't addressed effectively. The goddess traditions of the ancient world, however sophisticated their ecological awareness, often struggled to maintain political coherence in the face of imperial expansion and cultural disruption. The nature-based spiritual systems that Genesis replaced, however sustainable their environmental practices, sometimes lacked the institutional structures needed to preserve their wisdom across generational changes and geographical displacement. Contemporary efforts to reconstruct more sustainable mythological frameworks need to address these historical limitations while preserving the essential insights that earlier traditions developed. This requires sophisticated understanding of how religious systems actually function in practice, not just how they appear in idealized descriptions. It requires attention to questions of institutional sustainability, cross-cultural translation, and practical implementation that go beyond the construction of compelling narratives. The ongoing scholarly work of excavating and interpreting ancient mythological traditions provides essential resources for this reconstruction project, but it also reveals the complexity of the challenges involved. Every new archaeological discovery adds nuance to our understanding of how religious systems actually functioned in their original cultural contexts, but it also complicates efforts to adapt elements from those systems for contemporary use. The cylinder seals, temple complexes, and ritual objects that preserve evidence of ancient goddess traditions don't just show us alternative ways of organizing religious authority. They reveal entire worldviews that integrated spiritual practice, social organization, and ecological awareness in ways that are difficult for people raised in Western cultural contexts to fully comprehend. Adapting elements from these traditions requires not just intellectual understanding, but psychological and spiritual transformation that may take generations to accomplish. This long-term perspective is crucial for understanding why the Hebrew theological revolution was so successful and why contemporary efforts to construct alternative mythological frameworks face such significant challenges. The Genesis narrative didn't transform civilization overnight. It established conceptual foundations that took centuries to fully develop their cultural implications. Contemporary reconstruction efforts need to think in similar timescales, focusing on establishing intellectual and spiritual foundations that can support long-term cultural evolution rather than expecting immediate practical results. The educational implications are particularly important. The discovery of the pagan origins of biblical narratives creates opportunities for teaching approaches that help students understand how religious traditions actually develop and change over time. Instead of presenting religious texts as timeless truths or primitive mythologies, educators can explore them as sophisticated examples of theological innovation and cultural adaptation that remain relevant for understanding contemporary challenges. This educational approach requires careful attention to questions of religious sensitivity and cultural respect, but it also offers possibilities for helping students develop more nuanced understanding of how religious authority actually functions and how spiritual traditions can be evaluated and adapted for contemporary needs. Understanding how the Adam and Eve narrative was constructed from earlier mythological materials provides a concrete example of how humans have always engaged in the ongoing work of mythological reconstruction. The psychological dimensions of this educational work are particularly complex. Students who have been raised within religious traditions that present Genesis as divinely revealed truth may experience significant cognitive dissonance when confronted with evidence of its pagan origins. But this dissonance can also create opportunities for deeper understanding of how religious meaning actually functions and how spiritual traditions can remain psychologically powerful even when their historical origins are fully understood. The key is helping students recognize that understanding the human processes through which religious narratives get constructed doesn't necessarily diminish their cultural significance or spiritual value. The Adam and Eve story remains psychologically compelling and culturally influential regardless of whether it originated through divine revelation or sophisticated theological adaptation. What changes is our understanding of how such narratives function and how they might be evaluated, interpreted, and potentially reconstructed for contemporary purposes. This perspective opens up possibilities for more creative and flexible approaches to religious and spiritual education that don't depend on defending the historical accuracy of particular narratives. Instead of asking whether ancient stories literally happened, educators can explore how they work as cultural artifacts, what psychological needs they address, and how they continue to influence contemporary consciousness. This approach allows for serious engagement with religious traditions while maintaining intellectual honesty about their historical development. The research methodologies that revealed the pagan origins of biblical narratives also provide models for investigating other foundational cultural narratives that shape contemporary consciousness. The same archaeological and textual analysis techniques that uncovered the Mesopotamian sources of Genesis can be applied to exploring the historical development of other influential stories, concepts, and institutions that often get presented as natural or inevitable rather than historically contingent. This broader application of critical historical analysis has the potential to reveal the constructed character of many aspects of contemporary culture that people typically take for granted. Economic systems, political institutions, social hierarchies, gender roles, and educational practices. All of these cultural patterns have historical origins that can be investigated and understood, potentially opening up possibilities for conscious reconstruction and adaptation. The methodological approach becomes particularly important for understanding how contemporary mythological reconstruction projects might actually work in practice. The Hebrew scribes didn't succeed through pure creativity or divine inspiration. They succeeded through careful study of existing cultural materials, sophisticated understanding of their audience's psychological needs, and strategic thinking about how to advance their theological agenda while maintaining cultural continuity. Contemporary reconstruction efforts could benefit from similar methodological rigor and strategic thinking. This requires moving beyond romantic idealization of either ancient wisdom traditions or contemporary innovation possibilities toward more realistic assessment of what kinds of cultural transformation are actually possible given existing constraints and opportunities. It requires attention to questions of institutional sustainability, cross-cultural communication, and practical implementation that go beyond the construction of intellectually satisfying theoretical frameworks. The global scope of contemporary challenges makes this methodological sophistication particularly crucial. Climate change, social inequality, political polarization, and technological disruption are creating pressures for cultural transformation that may be unprecedented in human history. Responding effectively to these challenges may require mythological reconstruction projects that can function across multiple cultural traditions simultaneously while remaining sensitive to local needs and constraints. The Adam and Eve narrative provides a useful case study for understanding both the possibilities and the dangers inherent in such ambitious reconstruction projects. The theological innovations embedded in Genesis succeeded in transforming civilization, but they also established conceptual patterns that eventually contributed to many of the problems that contemporary humanity now faces. Learning from this historical precedent could help contemporary reconstruction efforts avoid similar unintended consequences while preserving the transformative potential that makes mythological innovation so powerful. The discoveries we've explored reveal not just the pagan origins of one particular biblical narrative, but the ongoing human need to construct meaningful frameworks for understanding existence that can sustain communities through historical challenges while remaining adaptable to changing circumstances. This need continues today as communities around the world struggle to develop cultural alternatives that can address contemporary challenges while preserving essential human values and possibilities. Understanding how the Adam and Eve narrative was actually constructed provides crucial tools for participating consciously in this ongoing cultural work. Instead of being passive recipients of inherited mythological frameworks, we can become active participants in the continuous human project of constructing and reconstructing the stories, symbols, and conceptual systems that shape consciousness and guide community life. The rabbit hole of pagan origins leads us ultimately not just backward into ancient history, but forward into questions about cultural responsibility and human possibility that remain as urgent today as they were for the Hebrew scribes working in Babylonian exile nearly 3 millennia ago. Their theological innovations continue to influence human consciousness because they address fundamental questions about authority, knowledge, and relationship that every generation must answer for itself. The difference is that we now have access to historical perspective that reveals how such innovations actually work and what their long-term consequences might be. This perspective doesn't provide simple answers to contemporary challenges, but it does offer tools for approaching those challenges with greater sophistication and historical awareness. The pagan origins of Adam and Eve reveal not just the past, but possibilities for conscious participation in the ongoing evolution of human consciousness that remain largely unexplored. So, here we are, some 4,000 years after Hebrew scribes first put stylus to clay in the libraries of Babylon, and the implications of what we've discovered are still unfolding. We've traced the Adam and Eve story from its pagan origins through its brilliant theological transformation, revealing not divine dictation, but human genius working with inherited cultural materials to create something genuinely revolutionary. The evidence is overwhelming. The linguistic connections to Tiamat and Tiham, the Mesopotamian Adamu, the goddess Ninti, whose name means both Lady of the Rib and Lady of Life, the flood narratives that predate Noah by over a millennium, and the systematic transformation of serpent wisdom into serpent deception. What we've uncovered isn't just academic curiosity. It's the archaeological fingerprints of one of history's most sophisticated theological reconstruction projects. But perhaps the most remarkable thing about this discovery is what it reveals about the ongoing human need to construct meaningful narratives that can sustain communities through crisis while remaining adaptable to changing circumstances. The Hebrew scribes weren't primitive plagiarists. They were brilliant cultural architects who understood how to use familiar mythological elements to advance revolutionary new ideas about authority, knowledge, and human possibility. Understanding this process doesn't diminish the power of these ancient stories. If anything, it makes them more remarkable. The fact that theological innovations created during the Babylonian exile continue to shape human consciousness millennia later demonstrates the extraordinary power of well-crafted mythological narratives to influence cultural evolution across vast spans of time. And here's the thing. This process of mythological reconstruction isn't finished. It's ongoing. Every generation faces the challenge of constructing cultural frameworks that can address fundamental questions about existence while responding to the specific challenges of their historical moment. The rabbit hole of pagan origins leads us not just backward into ancient history, but forward into our own responsibility as conscious participants in the continuing evolution of human consciousness. The ancient scribes who gave us Adam and Eve were doing essential human work that we're still called to do today. The only question is, what stories will we choose to tell?